Welcome to HN Pod, your daily deep dive into the top stories and most interesting debates from Hacker News. I am Sarah, and I am here with Mike.
Hey, everyone. Today is episode number 440, and we are looking back at the top trending stories from yesterday, June 27th, 2026. We have a really packed lineup today. We are going to be talking about a new breakthrough in AI inference from DeepSeek, a pretty wild anonymous drop of zero-day exploits on GitHub, Mark Zuckerberg going to extremes to silence a whistleblower, a massive update to the beloved OpenRA retro gaming project, and finally, a deep dive into the engineering behind fintech and why Hacker News loves to argue about floating point numbers.
Let us kick things off with AI. The top story yesterday was a paper from DeepSeek called DSpark, which details how speculative decoding can massively accelerate large language model inference. The post linked to a PDF on their GitHub, and it racked up over 700 points. But Mike, what I found fascinating wasn't just the technical achievement, it was the conversation it sparked about the geopolitical landscape of AI research.
Exactly. DeepSeek is a Chinese lab, and the top comment from Comrade John pointed out that they are consistently pushing boundaries, and more importantly, publishing incredible papers explaining exactly how they achieve their gains. The commentator noted that this is something the big American labs just do not do anymore.
Right. There was a bit of pushback on that. Someone mentioned that Google is still releasing a lot of architecture research, like their Gemma models and multi-token prediction, or MTP. But the general consensus in the thread was that companies like OpenAI and Anthropic have completely clammed up. They are sitting on massive valuations and need to protect their moats, so revealing their optimization tricks would hurt their competitive position.
And this brings up the most interesting theory from the thread. Why is DeepSeek being so open? A commentator named C7B brought up that DeepSeek actually came out of a quantitative hedge fund. They operate under a completely different funding model than US labs. For them, AI is infrastructure, not an API product they need to monetize directly. The return on investment comes from trading alpha.
That is such a good point. Another user pointed out that destroying the growth story of overvalued US AI stocks could literally be an investment strategy for a hedge fund. If you can commoditize the very thing your competitors are claiming as a proprietary moat, you disrupt the entire market. Plus, in the Chinese domestic market, open source distribution is often the only way to reach enterprise clients who refuse to pay software as a service premiums. It is a completely different business logic.
It really is. And on the technical side, the thread got deep into the weeds on multi-token prediction. People were debating whether the MTP drafter should be kept as a separate model file or grafted onto the main model to reduce layer duplication. It is clear that the open source community is moving incredibly fast to implement these techniques in tools like Llama.c++.
Moving from AI optimization to AI security, our next story is about an anonymous GitHub account called Bikini that just mass dropped a bunch of undisclosed zero-day vulnerabilities. The repository is called Exploitarium, and the author explicitly states they are doing this to allure people into the cybersecurity field.
It is a chaotic approach to disclosure, for sure. The author claims they used GPT-5.53 Codex Spark for all the fuzzing. But they were very quick to defend themselves against the narrative that they are just some random kid burning API tokens. They actually have a degree in the subject and spent years researching fuzzing methodology. They built a highly efficient, strict harness for the AI to use. They even pointed out that none of the proof-of-concept exploits were, as they called it, vibe-coded. They hand-typed them.
The Hacker News community immediately started tearing into the actual exploits to see if they were legitimate. A user named Retroid looked at the vulnerabilities for the reverse engineering tool Ghidra and was pretty unimpressed. One of them basically just required the ability to overwrite binaries in a specific directory, which, as they pointed out, if you can overwrite binaries a program executes, of course you can trigger code execution. That is not really a surprise or a high-severity bug.
But on the other hand, someone looked at the exploit for Nmap, the network scanning tool, and noted it could be highly severe. It involved parsing IPv6 packets. As one commenter pointed out, there is a certain irony to being able to get a reverse shell on the person who is actively port scanning your server. If it actually allows arbitrary code execution, that is the exact kind of bug an intelligence agency would love to have.
The whole thread devolved into a massive debate about the ethics of this. Some people were saying this just creates a nightmare for open source maintainers who now have to gawk at this random repository to see if their project is affected. One commenter called it a performative complaint about the high friction of responsible disclosure that ultimately helps nobody. But others completely disagreed, saying they would much rather have these exploits out in the public square than secretly hoarded in some government or corporate toolbox.
It is the classic security disclosure debate, just accelerated by AI fuzzing. Speaking of secrets and disclosure, let us talk about our third story. Cory Doctorow published a piece on his Pluralistic blog titled Zuckerberg's Increasingly Bizarre War on Whistleblowers. This got a lot of attention, over 600 points.
This story is wild. It centers on Sarah Wynne Williams, who used to be the head of international relations at Facebook, now Meta. She wrote an internationally best-selling memoir called Careless People, which details some pretty severe institutional misconduct and personal failings of Meta's executive team. But because of the extreme non-disclosure, non-disparagement, and forced arbitration agreement she signed, Meta took her to a private arbitrator.
And the penalty was staggering. The arbitrator awarded Meta $50,000 for every single criticism she levied in the book, which quickly added up to over $11 million. It is designed to completely wipe her out financially. But the bizarre part that Doctorow highlights is how she has responded. She is strictly adhering to the arbitrator's gag order, but doing it in the most visible way possible.
Right. Doctorow mentioned that when he did a book launch event with her in London, anytime Meta came up, she would just fall completely silent and assume a blank expression. When she won the British Book Award, she did not speak. At the Hay Festival, she sat on stage with other journalists for an hour in total silence because Meta sent a legal threat saying that speaking about anything in public would violate the order.
Doctorow compared it to a protest in Belarus years ago, where activists just ate ice cream in a public square to force the dictator to arrest them for doing something completely innocuous, exposing the absurdity of the regime. By forcing Wynne Williams to literally sit motionless and silent on stage, Meta is generating way more attention for her book than if they had just ignored it. It is the Streisand effect on steroids.
The Hacker News comments were trying to figure out why Meta would double down on such a bad PR move. A user named Doff suggested that maybe it is not bizarre at all if you assume Meta is acting out of genuine fear. The theory is that there might be something even worse that they know she could have put in the book, or that another executive might write about, and they need to make a terrifying example out of her to keep everyone else quiet.
There was also a lot of discussion about how UK libel laws make this kind of bullying much easier, since the burden of proof is often on the defendant, and the legal costs alone can bankrupt you even if you win. It is a really chilling look at how modern corporate NDAs function.
Let us shift gears to something a bit more fun. OpenRA was trending yesterday. This is the open source project that rebuilds classic real-time strategy games like Command & Conquer, Red Alert, and Dune 2000 for modern systems. They just released a massive new playtest update.
I love this project. The big news in this release is the addition of random map generators, which is a huge deal for replayability. They also added new visual effects for Dune 2000 and better support for the high-definition assets from the official Command & Conquer remastered collection.
The nostalgia in the Hacker News thread was palpable. People were talking about listening to Frank Klepacki's legendary Hell March soundtrack while coding. But what I really enjoyed was the technical discussion about how the game actually works under the hood.
Yes, OpenRA uses a deterministic lockstep engine. A user named BW12 brought up a really interesting pain point. Because of how the engine works, it doesn't just save the current state of the board. To load a save game, it literally has to replay the entire history of the match from the very beginning. So if you're playing a massive 8-player map for 20 hours, loading your save game can take 2 hours of your CPU running at maximum capacity, just to catch up to the present moment.
It sounds crazy, but another commenter pointed out that StarCraft II actually uses a very similar design. If you disconnect from a match and rejoin, the game scrubs through the entire history to get you back in sync. It avoids a ton of synchronization headaches, even if it creates this funny edge case for massive single-player saves.
There was also a lot of praise for how OpenRA handles game balance. Someone mentioned that in the original 1995 Red Alert, using Allied artillery against Soviet Tesla coils was basically a death sentence. But OpenRA balanced it so you can fire from beyond the coil's range, forcing the defender to actually come out of their base. It is a great example of taking a classic game and fixing the mechanics without losing the soul of the original.
All right. Our final story for today is the FinTech Engineering Handbook. It is a guide by Wojtek Piczula on the patterns for building software that handles money. It covers things like double-entry bookkeeping, idempotency, and audit trails. The core principles are no invented data, no lost data, and no trust.
It is a really solid primer, but in true Hacker News fashion, the comment section immediately zeroed in on one specific technical debate, which is how you represent money in code. The article states that using floating point numbers is almost never a good idea due to unpredictable precision loss, and recommends using integers representing the minor unit, like cents.
Oh, people had strong feelings about this. A user named XLII said that if they ever see a monetary value stored in anything other than integers, they run away screaming. They felt the article was not opinionated enough by saying floats are almost never a good idea. They wanted it to say never, period.
But then the quant finance developers chimed in to defend floating point numbers. A user named Oddthink pointed out that whole domains of finance run perfectly fine on doubles. If you were doing Monte Carlo options pricing over interest rate paths, you were looking at risk metrics like durations and convexity. You were dealing with continuous math, exponential functions, and normal distributions. You cannot force those calculations in integers.
I thought that was such a great distinction. If you are building a ledger for a bank or a crypto custodian, you absolutely need exact integer precision because you cannot lose a single penny. The books have to balance perfectly. But if you are modeling risk or pricing derivatives, approximate is fine, and floating point numbers are the only way to do the math efficiently. It just goes to show that even in a highly regulated field like fintech, the right engineering choice depends entirely on your specific domain.
Exactly. Context is everything. Well, that is going to do it for today's episode of HN Pod. We covered a lot of ground, from hedge funds open sourcing AI to whistleblower GOG orders and retro gaming engines.
Thanks so much for hanging out with us. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We will be back tomorrow with another breakdown of the top stories from Hacker News. See you then.